This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program for the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. Want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Walter Koenig, Chekhov from Star Trek, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Risk is our business.
It's like nothing we've dealt with before.
By golly, Jim, I'm beginning to think I can cure a rainy day.
I can't change the laws of physics.
Now in standard orbit, sir.
Welcome, everyone, to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's podcast dedicated to the original and new adventures of Captain Kirk and the Enterprise. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm your only host this week. This is a unique experience for me. I rarely podcast alone, so Ken did a few of these when I was out for a while, so this is my stab at it. And this one is all about me, so it might be an easier subject to talk about since I'm the only one here. Ask Zach Anything is the questionnaire that I put out on the Babel Conference not too long ago. And you guys asked me some questions and Star Trek, and mostly Star Trek, as it should be, I guess. This is a Star Trek podcast. So I'm just going to read them off here and respond to all your questions. Thank you, everyone who asked and participated. And hopefully I'm going to give you some answers you find insightful and enjoyable. So Rebecca Skipper asked our first question. She had three questions, actually. Rebecca first says, which actor plays your favorite version of Kirk? TOS, Star Trek Continues, New Voyages, the Kelvin Timeline. And then her second question is, which is your favorite version of Spock? The options I've mentioned. And we'll save her third one. Her third one's a little different than the first two. Now, the first two questions, favorite Kirk, favorite Spock. Well, you can't go wrong with William Shatner and later Nimoy. They define the characters unlike characters like, you know, James Bond or Sherlock Holmes or characters like that, where they originated in fiction and there have been many different interpretations of those characters over the years, you know, Superman, Batman, superheroes as well, because that's, you know, that's the modern mythology, right? Shatner and Nimoy originated these characters. You know, of course, they were from the written page, you know, from the scripts and whatnot, but it's like Indiana Jones. You know, you can't think of anybody else playing Indiana Jones than Harrison Ford. And you can't think of anyone else playing Kirk and Spock than Shatner and Nimoy. Now, I say that, but I do enjoy all the following performances. But it's a different mindset than a role. With some, you know, okay, look at it's like plays, too. You know, how many people played Hamlet? How many people have played Ebenezer Scrooge, right? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But for, you know, let's see, about 40 years, the only canon on-screen Kirk and Spock were Shatner and Nimoy, and they defined those characters over a span. They played them, you know, consistently for 25 years, then little pockets of here and there on and off in between and after that. So, yeah, the answer to that question cannot be anything else but William Shatner's Kirk and Leonard Nimoy and Spock. Now, I will speak to the other interpretations of them, if that's what you're interested in. I think that's what you're going for the questions. I love Vic Mignogna as Kirk. He is the definitive non-Shatner Kirk. I think he has perfectly captured his mannerisms, his style of speech. It's such a fine line to walk when you're channeling someone else's performance to not be a parody. And Shatner is so easily parodied by people, his manner of speech, the way he carries himself, all that stuff, it's ripe for comedy. And you know, that's why he's had such a successful career resurgence in his later years as a, you know, I won't say comedic actor, but a dramedy actor. You know, I mean, Boston Legal, I mean, won Emmy Awards and a commercial spokesman for many products. Priceline, of course, being the number one. So I you gotta give it to Vic to be able to channel that and not be a joke. You know, that's really easy for that to happen. You can really easily slip into that. So he's my number two. Number three after that, you got to go with Chris Pine. He plays a very different Kirk. Obviously, it's a different timeline. The character's changed because his circumstances of his upbringing have changed. His youth has changed. He has no father around, and that has changed his entire character, as we see in the first two movies of the Kelvin timeline. Now, that was a very weak link for me, honestly, and not really Chris Pine's performance. He did what he was supposed to do, but that wasn't Kirk. But that was the point, you know. So you get to beyond. He's awesome as Kirk. Kirk, that's the Kirk we all know and love and want. That's Captain Kirk right there, and that shows the great range Chris Pine is an actor. He can play this kind of rebellious, dare I say, stereotypical Kirk in the first two films, and then it comes a third one where he needs to be the mature captain. He can totally do it. And so Chris Pine there. Now, as far as Star Trek New Voyages, you got to give a lot of credit to James Colley. He was the first guy to do it. You know, he was the Star Trek New Voyages launched basically fan films as we knew them for, well, about 15 years, I think, give or take. You know, now we're in a new chapter of fan films based off CBS's guidelines and whatnot. But yeah, James Colley, you know, he had the Elvis hair, right? But he was an Elvis impersonator, so I'm not going to knock him for that. I mean, that is what he did for a living, and that gave him the funds to do what we all want to do, right? Be Captain Kirk, live out the dream of being on the Enterprise and wearing the uniform and holding the props and going through the emotions and all that. So James Colley, you know, he forged a new path for fan films. So I got to give him a lot of credit there. And then Brian Gross, I didn't really, I don't know how many episodes he was in as far as Star Trek New Voyages goes, because they had had some delays, and then right when they really started to come back is when all the fan film stuff kind of went down. So we didn't get really a big taste of him. He was just kind of finding his feet in the role. I believe he was like in two episodes of New Voyages and then a short, a vignette. So we didn't really get a big taste of him as Kirk. And, you know, that was a recasting into itself, right, within a fan film, because it was James Colley for so long and then Brian Gross came in. So that is how I would rank my Kirks, if you will. Now, when it comes to Spock, my number two Spock, that's tough. Because, again, Quinto's Spock is so different than the Spock that we know. And, again, that's because his background is different. You know, his mother has died. And these, again, you got to remember the first two Kelvin timeline movies, they're younger versions of the characters than we have seen in TOS. And, if you look at Spock in the cage, he's very emotional, you know. Where no man has gone before, he's still, like, shouty Spock and kind of smiling at stuff. And I love how they try to explain that in books and stuff otherwise. So, I will, just because, here's the thing, no one else who has played Spock, because Spock's such a unique character. It's actually much, much harder character to recapture lightning in a bottle than with Kirk. I think the missing element to everyone else who's ever played Spock is his voice. I think Leonard Nimoy had this great voice, you know, it sounded like more George Takei there, but he had this dark, gravelly voice, and it lent itself so well to voiceover, and that's what he did. You know, he did the voiceover work. He did voiceover on Transformers, of all things. He was in The Page Master as Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. That's a little scene that, if you guys know what I'm talking about, that scene really creeped me out as a kid. It was actually very scary. But no one else has done that. Even Zachary Quinto, who I would, if you know, for having to, if that's what I'm doing here, and to answer your question, I'm ranking the Spocks, and Zachary Quinto would be number two for me. The only thing he's missing is the voice, and yes, he has his emotional outburst, but I see a little bit of Sylar in his from Heroes in his performances sometimes. But yeah, I would rank him as second. Now, after that, got to go with Todd Haberkorn as Spock from Star Trek Continues. He, you know, the voice isn't quite there, and that's the way with all these guys, right? But the presence, the mannerisms, the body language, you know, and I've said this before about Star Trek Continues, if you squint, you know, if you're in the other room, right, and you're far away, and you're just kind of vaguely looking at it or listening to it, you think you're watching Star Trek. You think you're watching lost episodes of Star Trek, and I really think that he did a great job with that. That is a hard character, because a lot of, and we'll get into this, I guess, as I'm going down the list here, not to slight any of the actors, but I feel like a lot of the other actors, they play Spock more like Data, you know, and Spock is more layered than that. And I feel like Todd got that. He found that balance. Now, when it comes to New Voyages, they actually had several Spocks. The first Spock being Jeff Quinn, and I liked him the best. Maybe that's because he was there from the start. But I felt like he, and even visually, you know, I felt like he looked the most like Spock. When I think of Star Trek New Voyages and I think of other characters, because they had, much like Kirk, you know, most of the characters actually got recast over the many years that they did the show. I would say Jeff Quinn was the best of the lot there. Now, to my knowledge, there were two other guys that played Spock on New Voyages. One, Ben Tolpin, and then secondly, Brandon Stacey. Of those two, I would say Brandon Stacey, because he looks a lot like Zachary Quinto. By the way, he was actually his stand-in for the Kelvin Timeline movie. So it's an interesting way to find a Spock right there, right? So it's still in the family, so to speak. But he was also in played a Romulan in Star Trek 09. I believe he was part of Nero's crew, I believe, as an extra, you know. And if I recall, and I'm just kind of, this is off the top of my head here, I believe Will Wheaton did the ADR on his voice. So but anyway, he's got the looks advantage because he looks like Zachary Quinto there. And then lastly, Ben Tolpin, he wasn't in that many episodes as Spock. I believe it was only in Blood and Fire, the two-parter by David Gerrold. So a very much like Brian Grouse's Kirk, a very small sample size. So that's my take. And then again, you know, when you get into the fan films, it's they're all labors of love, right? I never like to be too critical of anyone or another actor and all that. And all these people play better Kirks and Spocks than I certainly could. so I give them credit there. So hopefully that answers your questions there, Rebecca, about the my favorite Kirks and Spocks, and I've just ranked them all for you. And then finally, she says, "Finally, how do you see Star Trek Discovery connecting to TOS now or in the future, thematically or otherwise?" Well, that is a loaded question. As far as, you know, thematically, you know, I think they're getting there. I must admit, I'm not keeping up with the show on a week by week basis. I'm keeping tabs on the show, the fan reaction and whatnot. I've not really worried about spoilers, so I do know everything that's going on. But I don't sit and experience it every week like everybody else. Like on Sunday, okay, it's Sunday, it just came out, everybody watch it, you know. So I catch up with it during the week and whatnot. So I kind of miss the initial waves of initial fan reaction, and that kind of helps me sometimes too, because you know this is new ground for Star Trek, and you know, maybe in season two I'll get in on it as it happens. But for season one, I just kind of wanted to, well, kind of take it on its own and not get caught up in the highs or lows of fandom on the internet, because it's so easy to get swept away, and everybody's strong initial for first impressions of every episode. But obviously they're working their way there. They're a lot more. I mean, the Mirror Universe. Sorry, I didn't expect that. Jonathan Frakes had mentioned that there was going to be a Mirror Universe episode, but I didn't realize it was going to be such a huge component to the show in the first season. So that's a huge deal there for as far as connecting to TOS. Obviously, you got characters like Mudd and Sarek, and they do a great job on the Edge over there talking about all these connections to TOS. So I don't know, like, as far as connecting, you mean like if you mean like bridging the gap between them, I feel like they could still do it. You know, we could meet, you know, there could be a season two. Are they going to show the Enterprise, right? You know, I mean, Spock, Kirk, you know what? Do we get another recasting? I assume they would recast everybody, talking about new Kirks and Spocks, right? I mean, we have our third Sarek here. You know, they didn't use Ben Cross, I don't assume they would use Chris Pine or Zach Quinto, especially if this is going to be in the prime timeline. So, don't know what they would do in that regard. It's weird. If it was like, if this is a broadcast show and it's like, oh, it's sweeps week, let's bring in the Enterprise, let's see, you know, Captain Pike, right, or something like that. But since it's a streaming show, they don't operate on those same, you know, on that same way, you know, like in like Supergirl, right, season two, they brought in Superman in the season premiere, two-part season premiere, they brought in Superman, and also the season finale, and that's like a big deal. You know, it's like, oh, that gets people watching. You know, even people that weren't necessarily up with the show, they're like, oh, Superman's on, let me watch. And I feel like if Discovery was on, you know, CBS or the CW, I'd be like, oh, man, the season premiere, the Enterprise is on? Okay, I'm going to watch no matter what, and that would bring in viewers. But since that's not the case, they're doing a very interesting way of, like, bringing in, you know, fan service, but also, you know, upsetting a lot of the upsetting a lot of the same hardcore fans with all the continuity things, too. So it's a real give and take with Discovery. So thematically, it's going to get there. It's the story-wise timeline stuff I'm most interested in to see if they, you know, if they even get to that period of time, because remember, this is 10 years before, but they've already done some time jumping around, so who knows what's going to happen in that regard. But it'll be very interesting to see. I mean, it's just like when Enterprise first came out, people are like, how is this going to fit? And then, you know, you wait, and the show takes its time, and you zoom back and see the big picture, and you find ways to fit it in. Just the same Discovery, same with any new iteration of Trek. Wedging it in right before TOS was dangerous ground as far as fandom and continuity goes, but I'm interested to see how it all, especially as it keeps, you know, as the seasons start piling up, who knows? I mean, I doubt it'll run the whole 10 seasons. I mean, who knows with these Netflix streaming show models, you know, shorter seasons. As long as the actors are available, they're telling good stories, and it's successful and popular, let's keep seeing seasons, and eventually they will get into the 2260s if they keep this up. So we shall see how it connects the TOS. So thank you, Rebecca, for those, and that was... It was a rather long answer there, but I feel like I go into ethic. You know, since I'm here by myself, I know that I got to fill a certain amount of time. I don't want to blow through these questions and and give you guys a 15-minute episode. So I think we're already past that now, so I can kind of speak with more brevity if that is called for. We shall see. So AJ Black, Tony, host of Primitive Culture, one of my favorite shows on network, by the way, Tony, and host of the X-Cast, another one of my favorite podcasts, asked me, what kind of evil beard would Mirror Universe Zach sport? Well, as some of you guys who follow me on social media and seen some of my pictures have seen, I experimented with some facial hair at the end of last year, unsuccessfully. So I would, I've attempted, you know, it's not for everybody, guys. You know, I have attempted to grow a beard a couple times. This was by far my most serious attempt in my life. It's patchy. Just didn't, it, you know, not everybody can be season two Riker, you know. So I got to stick with the season one Riker look. It seems that way to me. So I'm hopefully in the Mirror Universe, I would be less follically challenged and be able to grow a really nice, thick, awesome-looking beard. That would be really cool because, I would love to be able to just have a beard and just try it out for a while. And, I mean, that's what I was doing, but it didn't – I wouldn't really call it a beard. I would just call it facial hair. So hopefully my universe self – I would give a full – but none of this goatee stuff. I would go full beard in the Mirror Universe and really take advantage of it. So next question comes from Ben Greet, and he asked me, what do you think about the episode Bread and Circuses? And this is a great question, Ben. I really enjoy this episode. I know that it is controversial. I didn't really, you know, you watch these episodes when you're younger, you're like, oh, okay, you take Star Trek as it is, and then you get into the greater fandom, and you're like, oh, people think this is weird, or people doesn't think this fit, et cetera, et cetera. I can speak to, you know, being a Christian myself, I enjoy the messages of the episode. I'm like, oh, look, you know, they're talking about religion and Jesus in a way that is not... dismissive, you know. So I enjoy that aspect of the episode. At the same time, it's very subtle and it's kind of a twist at the end. Like they're not talking about the sun in the sky; they're talking about the Son of God. So I really like that. And of course, it's one of these parallel Earth stories. So you know what? I mean, season two is the season of the fill in the blank Earth history planet, right? Hodgkin's law of parallel development. Thank you, thank you for that, Star Trek. I thought it was interesting to see a 20th century Roman society. It's fascinating to see how they'd be on using television to show gladiatorial matches. That's of course the natural evolution of that. If the Roman Empire had never fallen, why hasn't it fallen yet? Well, there's been no Jesus yet. Could that be a factor? I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they're trying to say that in the episode or not. But I really like that episode, and it's a good one. It has a good message, and yeah, those are my thoughts. And I don't think it contradicts anything Star Trek stands for, because if y'all recall, we'll recall our and again, Ken Finner, he would laugh at me. I don't remember the episode name or no. I believe that episode name was The Gospel Corner of Star Trek. I don't remember the number, but it's when we interviewed author Kevin C. Nease, and we talked about how the concepts of organized religion and Star Trek aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. You know, a lot of people think they are, because Christianity is also very humanitarian, and there seems to be a separation sometimes between the two of them. Because people are like, well, I can't really like this philosophy if I like this philosophy, and that's not the case. And I feel like maybe that's why a lot of people single out this episode. You know, it's like, oh, that's the Christian episode. You know, that's I like it. You know, and that's me. And if you guys are be interested to see what do you think about it, Ben? I assume you have some kind of take on it since you asked me about it. But yeah, but that's my take on it. It's a lot better than the Patterns of Force, the Nazi episode, right? But and then and just as a story as a whole, I did like the arc of Merrick there. He redeems himself at the end. You know, he had betrayed his crew and for survival, and was really the last one left, and then saw how Kirk and Spock and McQuirk and they executed, and he gave his life at the end to save his friends. And what is greater than a man who would lay down his life for his friends, right? So to tie it all together. But yeah, that was a very poignant end to that episode, I think, where he calls the Enterprise and they beam up right as the guns are firing, and they escape. Merrick doesn't, unfortunately, but he does redeem himself there at the end. So that was a very strong emotional ending to that episode. So Tim Hans says, Zach, keep up the excellent job podcasting as always. My question for you: if you had the opportunity to pitch an idea for a new Star Trek series to the studio, what would it be? Same question applies to Ken while he's reading the comments while doing On Location Filming. Well, Ken, feel free to comment on this, I guess, in the comments when the show gets posted. But as for me, see, this is tough, because I think the window of opportunity has closed for all the shows I would have wanted to see that I immediately go to, right? I say an Excelsior show with George Takei, Sulu, Gracie Whitney, and all that stuff. That I would have loved to see an Excelsior show instead of Voyager or instead of Enterprise. And I say that instead of those two shows, because that would have been the time to do it. Not necessarily like, let's erase these shows and use this one instead. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there was a limited window of opportunity. I mean, you look at 1995, Star Trek coming to 30th anniversary. They did, the flashback, the episode of Voyager, was practically a backdoor pilot, for an Excelsior show. And then, Enterprise was really your last window of opportunity, truly, because that's, 2001. So you're getting really, it's 10 years after Star Trek VI at that point. And in a perfect world, right, I would have, pitched, a show that takes place on the Excelsior after Star Trek VI. You literally open it up with, much like Deep Space Nine, its premiere opened up with the Battle of Wolf 359. You open up Excelsior with the Battle of Kittimer. And saving the president and all that, and the ships, they say goodbye, to Kirk and the Enterprise, and then, Sulu and the Excelsior go off, and then we stay with them. Get Tim Ruffs up in there. I know that if you do this instead of Voyager, you can't really put Tim Ruffs in it. Now, if you do it instead of Enterprise, you can, right? You get Gracie Whitney, you get anybody back, Walter Koenig. He was doing great work on Babylon 5 at the time. That's probably his best role as Bester, the telepath, recurring role several seasons on B5. He was great on that. Would he be interested in coming back to Star Trek, maybe being Sulu's first officer? I guess he was the first officer of the Reliant, and then after everything happened with Star Trek II, he just got bumped back down to the sitting there at the navigator station on the Enterprise A. But yeah, that would be my ideal Star Trek show, because then you feel it's this perfect, like, lost years of Star Trek. You have guest appearances, right, by Leonard Nimoy as Spock, or, Nichelle Nichols as Uhura, right? You get to see other characters. You get to see first contact with the Cardassians. You get to see all these things. That is my, like, ultimate what if. I would have wanted that to happen in Star Trek show, Star Trek Excelsior, with Captain Sulu. Yeah, but that's not an option anymore. So if you really want me to pitch something, it's tough now, because I don't know where. It's like you pitch something that might happen, or what you really want to happen. And I don't know, for... let me think about this. The other option I go to, and I know the old Standard Orbit crew, Drew and Mike, were always talking about this, the John Show, Excelsior Show. I know I'm going back to that idea, but assuming there was no Discovery or anything anymore, and the Kelvin timeline was like the de facto new universe, I would love to see a John Cho Excelsior Show. I know I come back to that, but I feel like it would talk about representation, right? An Asian captain, you know? We have that now with Captain Georgiou. But Michelle Yeoh, short-lived, though. Spoilers, I guess, but she's back. More spoilers. Anyway, all that to say, I know there was that trending social media thing. What do you call it? A thing? Called a movement? Called a trend? I don't know what you call it. But there was a trend on social media for a while. They're like starring John Cho, hashtag starring John Cho, and they replaced, you know, all these movie posters and stuff, like, you know, Matt Damon, whoever, with John Cho. And I agree. John Cho's a great actor. I'd love to see more stuff. I feel like he could carry a TV show, you know? And then you get whoever else from the Kelvin timeline, you know, maybe, you know, Alice Eve, you know, if she wants to be Dr. Carolyn Marcus, she can be one of the characters on the Excelsior, and then the Kelvin timeline is such a blank slate. You know, we only have the three movies of a true canon, so you get to see a updated Excelsior and the Kelvin timeline. Of course, all the timelines moved up a little bit, but everything in the Kelvin timeline has moved up a bit. I mean, we're still pre, you know, TOS in those movies as far as the actual calendar years go. So yeah, that's gonna be my answer there. Excelsior again, John Cho TV show. He's proven to be a capable actor, capable lead. Just fill around him with some interesting characters. Let's get Mr. Kyle in there. Let's get, you know, Riley and all these names, that Dr. Mbinga, right? All these names that you know from TOS that we haven't seen in the Kelvin movies, just put them in there. You know, you got to be... And they're really blank slates of characters, right? All these guys I just mentioned were in a handful of episodes, tops, like two each for Riley and Mbinga. And then Mr. Kyle is just a background character who made a cameo in Star Trek II. So you get Ilea, get Savick, you know, whoever, right? Just recognizable names. That's what we want, right? As Star Trek fans. So just plug these characters in. And I would love to see that, because I don't know, where does the Kelvin timeline go from here, right? Because they're not going to go into movies. It's going to be Discovery and shows of that ilk. So are we, you know, is that it? Are we going to get, I mean, hopefully we'll get a Star Trek 4. If we don't, is it over? Are there other avenues? So there you have it. For like idealized what if, I would have loved to see Excelsior Show set, you know, in the prime timeline with George Takei. And again, they had all the props, they had the models, they had everything. Oh, it was so easy. I don't know why they didn't do it back then. But that would have been ideal. But realistic current day now, give me John Cho. It's Excelsior Show. That's what I would really like to see. So... hopefully that answers your question there, Tim. And yeah, I'll be. What would you like to see? I'll turn it around on you. If you had to pitch a, and I'll do that for all y'all who ask me questions. I will ask you the same questions, because obviously, I feel like if you ask me, you have your own take on that question and had an idea of what you would say to it. So please, if you can comment it on the last post in the Babel Conference, go ahead and comment on the new one, and let me know what your answers to that would be. So our next question comes from Justin Oser, host of Earl Grey, and he's been on Standard before as well, as has Tony Black. So, and he's being the Trek novels, so I understand why he's asking this question. If you've read some of the novels, what is your favorite TOS novel? And also, who's your favorite TOS guest star? Great questions there, Justin. So by far my favorite TOS, and I've read quite a few TOS novels over the years, a fraction of what you have, Justin. I think you read a book a week or whatever, so credit to you, my friend. But the Crucible Trilogy came out in 06 for the 40th anniversary. David R. George III is the author. This is my favorite Star Trek trilogy of novels. It centers around the events of City on the Edge of Forever. It's three books. It's McCoy, Providence of Shadows, Spock, Fire and the Rose, and Kirk's The Star to Every Wandering. And It basically the and they released them in the McCoy, Spock, then Kirk in that order, and the McCoy book is interesting because it takes place over two time periods or timelines. Like you see McCoy's life after City on the Edge of Forever all the way up to his 24th century life, as we see in Next Gen, You know, it skips several years and whatnot, but we get a flyover of his life. And then the other timeline is him in the 30s, having saved, if Kirk and Spock had not come back and saved him, as the timeline existed. It's kind of like a time echo, all right? Like they do on The Flash, I guess a time remnant, something like that. The Flash TV show talks about those, dead timelines and stuff like that. But, yeah, this is McCoy having saved Edith Keeler. America loses World War II, and he's stuck in that timeline. He can just imagine, God, that'd be terrible to know that, because he eventually realizes, what's happened. And he, he puts out ads in the paper trying to help Kirk and Spock find him, but you know that he's not going to be found in that timeline. He does find some happiness there, though, so it's not a complete tragedy, but at the same time, it's sad, because he's stuck there and he's never going to get back to his life in the 23rd century. Now, Spock's book, again, covers, the City and Legend Forever. City and Legend Forever is the crucible, right? That moment where they have to let Edith Keeler die. That's the titular crucible of all their lives, and everything kind of comes back to that. And we see, their time, Spock's and Kirk's books, because they didn't have that alternate timeline, we just really delve into their time in the 30s, Spock's time there, Kirk's time there, especially Kirk's time there, because his romance with Edith Keeler is really fleshed out, and that really helps out the episode, because, it was an episodic TV show in the 60s, so it didn't really, get the depth that you would, on a show like today, with the time, and have the time for it, but I think they really flesh it out well, and the Spock's book is really about that, dealing with Kirk's death and generations, just coming to terms with that, his relationship with his father and his parents, so specifically his father. And then Kirk's book is actually very interesting framing device as far as the modern-day Kirk story, modern-day, but the quote-unquote present, because there's the past of the episode and the modern-day Kirk story. It's his death and generations and how that wasn't really a death and how he had a whole grand adventure in between there with the using the Nexus and the Guardian. It's great, and there was going to be more. There was going to be more short stories and release this as an omnibus, but it was going to be published a few years after. David R. George completed all the work, but the book had been canceled. So hopefully one day we see the those new short stories, because they're going to release them all, as a as one volume, but with new short stories in between, like prologues and epilogues to each original novel. And I've been very fascinated to see that, because I'm sure there have been some great ideas in there. So anyway, that's really, really into depth there, but that's my favorite TOS novel. I love all the A.C. Crispin stuff. Yesterday's Sun, Time for Yesterday, ties into All Our Yesterdays. Really like those. Sarek, recently. I think there was a Justin, were you on that literary trek? So they talked about Sarek. I think he might have been. That I think about. We were talking about it on the Babel conference. But A.C. Crispin really has a great understanding of Vulcans and all that. Strangers from the Sky is really good. As well as what's the other one? Enterprise, The First Adventure. Also very good. A lot of the novelizations for the movies as well. I really like, especially Star Trek III's novelization. Of course, as everybody who listens to Standard Orbits knows that I'm a huge fan of Star Trek III. It's my favorite Star Trek movie. And Vonda McIntyre's novelization that really fleshes a lot of things out. And I enjoy that as well. Also, and I'll say this, William Shatner's books. I know they're not TOS per se, but I really enjoy his books, especially his Mirror Universe books, like Spectre and Dark Victory, and that whole trilogy he wrote on the Mirror. He usually does trilogies for his books. So I really enjoyed those too. So those are a little taste of my Star Trek novel preferences. So check out all those books. You have my recommendation. As far as your second question, who's your TOS favorite TOS guest star? You got to go with Ricardo Montalban. You have to. he not only was he the guy that, even if it wasn't for Star Trek II, right? Of course, he's the guy they brought back from Star Trek II, but even if he wasn't, he's the most dynamic, magnetic, just charismatic guy on the show. And you can see why Harv Bennett zeroed in, that's the guy. We need to come back to this character. He has such a presence and an air about him, and just And then it's hard to separate, you know, obviously I know Ricardo Montalban's work outside of Star Trek and legacy he has an actor and human being too. Great guy. But just focusing on that one episode, that one performance, I would have done the same thing if I were sitting there screening every episode in that room where Harvey Bennett was. I would have picked, you know what, this is the guy we need to come back to. There's interesting, there's a lot to this guy. You know, there's a lot to this performance too, not just the character, but, you know, a lot of times you can have a great actor and like, you know, he did what he could, but the writing wasn't really there. But with Ricardo Montalban as Khan, it's like, no, the writing is here, the performance is here, the character is here, this is great. And he's got to be the slam dunk number one TOS guest star for me. So, all right, then Lance Lasser. Lance is my best friend. Some of y'all might have met him at Star Trek Las Vegas. We went there with my dad back in 2016. Wow. But he asks, not sure if you've read them. What are your thoughts on Star Trek Green Lantern and the Star Trek X-Men books? I'll tell you this. I have not read Star Trek Green Lantern. I am interested to do so, though, because I really do enjoy the IDW comics. I don't read them issue by issue, but usually whenever my local comic book shops have like big, you know, they have big sales about every quarter, they have a big sale, you know, like 40% off graphic novels. I'll pick up the Star Trek IDW collections, the graphic novels. I think I have about 10 or 11 of them so far. And I think I'm coming up on the Green Lantern ones. I think they're collected by now. So I definitely want to check those out. That crosses over, obviously the DC Comics characters, Green Lanterns, and the Kelvin timeline crew. So I'd be very interested to check those out. So Lance should be the first to know when I get those. Or, you know, hey, my birthday's coming up pretty soon, so ideas there, right? As for Star Trek X-Men, I remember seeing those books when I was a kid, like actual novels, and I thought that was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen. And I still hold to that. It's especially funny when you consider that Picard and Professor X are both played by Patrick Stewart in live action. So I wonder if there's some kind of meta in joke there. I'm not sure exactly when those books were published, but if they were, you know, anything came out after 2000, I'm sure somebody snuck in something there. So that's my take on those. I really think that's odd, honestly, when you mix together properties like that. Like, that seems to be the thing to do nowadays. Like Star Trek, Planet of the Apes, or, you know, Star Trek, Doctor Who, and Batman, Ninja Turtles, right? It's like, well, these things exist in their own universe for a reason. That's why I don't really ever care to see a Star Trek, Star Wars crossover. I really don't. I'll leave that to the fan fiction, but which by the way, somebody asked me about fan fiction later on, so we'll I can kind of talk about that. So thanks, Lance. But yes, I want Star Trek Green Lantern graphic novels for my birthday. Put that on the list. Thanks, man. So Corey Elrod asks, which TOS episode, in your opinion, best sums up the spirit of Star Trek as a whole? I thought about this, and I did put some thought into these questions before I answered them. And, Corey, I would have to go with Arena. I feel like Cities on the Edge of Forever is great. The Mock Time, Where No Man Has Gone Before, those are all great. But if I had to, and those are, like, my top three, and I think my fourth, and I'm thinking about my top 10 of episodes here, right? Number four would probably be Arena. And I was like, if you had to show someone one episode of Star Trek to let them understand what it's all about and have all the characters and the tropes of the show, like where it's all, you know, because City of the Edge of Forever, it's great, but it's an excellent hour. Television is an excellent representation of Star Trek, like a Star Trek story, not necessarily. It could be a Twilight Zone or Outer Limits or something, right? It doesn't have to be the Star Trek characters there. With a Mock Time, sorry, personal story with Spock. Like, if you don't have the investment in Spock and then Spock and Kirk's friendship and all that, don't know if that episode still hits you the same way. Where No Man Has Gone Before, I think it's great. I think it has everything you need in Star Trek, but there is no McCoy, and it's a little different than the rest of the show as far as some of the characters go and whatnot. So I wouldn't necessarily show that someone in that first, I guess, because they'd have an expectation of what the show's going to be, and it looks very different. I'm kind of answering a question from a different angle, but that comes all, and again, that's why I understand why NBC didn't show it first, even though I think they probably should have, and we've talked about that many times in the past on Standard Orbit. But I think Arena, you know, it sums up, you know, you have an attack, you want to go after who attacks you for revenge, you gradually understand there was a misunderstanding there, you also have to use your wits and your technology to and your knowledge, you know, to overcome the situation, and then ultimately show mercy to your attacker and to your opponent. And so all those bullet points there, and I guess now they talk about that, it sounds kind of like Into Darkness, right? So it's all in the execution, folks. But yeah, that I feel like Arena would best sum up the spirit of Star Trek, because I mean, you're out there, you're in space, you're adventuring, you're gonna have action adventure, but you're also gonna have, you know, deep moral decisions to make, you know, hard decisions to make. And it's okay to initially make the wrong decision. Like, Kirk wants to go after these guys and attack them and kill them, but by the time it's all said and done, you make the right decision, that's what matters. I think, you know, that's a big point of Star Trek. So yeah, I believe it's been called the Citizen Kane of Star Trek, and I would agree with that. Arena is one of the best representations of what Star Trek is all about, and that to me, that is why I would say it sums up the spirit of Star Trek. So, all right, my friend Jimmy Goss says, if I made you go cosplay at a Trek convention as Gorgon in full shimmering muumuu, repeatedly quoting so shall you do, and death to you all, how much would I have to pay you? Well, I, you know, if you're going to pay me, I shouldn't say that I really wouldn't mind, because then I won't like get as much money. But we can discuss terms off microphone. But that's a silly question. He was just messing around. He asked me a serious question later. But I will say that would be a lot of fun and a lot easier than people think. I literally all I have to do is get like a shower curtain or you know, maybe paint it silver with some shiny stuff and put some gray in my hair and just walk around. I think people will get a kick out of that. That would actually get a lot more, you know, I think you get a lot more reaction at a convention walking around like that, and you want to just another Starfleet uniform or something. So I'll have to think about that for my next cosplay, Jimmy. Then he asked me a real question. What do you consider the most overrated or overly beloved episodes and the most unrated or overlooked episodes? Top three of each. Wow. So I put some thought into this before before recording here, and it's the most underrated or overlooked. That's an easier conversation than the reverse. So it's tough, you know, because no matter what you say, especially for the overrated or overly beloved, which is it's a very relative term. But that's tough. So I'll start with underrated. So it's underrated. We talked about this before, just recently. What Are the Little Girls Made Of? Written by Robert Block. Me and Brandon Shamatella are going to do a commentary on that to close out our Robert Block trilogy of commentaries. I think that's an amazing episode. It really asks you a lot of questions about identity and, you know, it's there are a lot of people, like, that seems, I haven't watched the Black Mirror. I'm going to get into it, especially now with this USS Callister episode everybody's talking about. And I love the Twilight Zone, and people are, I guess, the new modern Twilight Zone. And I'm like, all right, I've heard nothing but good things about it. I'm going to check it out. But it seems to me like this would fit right in with the Black Mirror from what I've understand about the stories and stuff they've been telling, you know, stuff like, you know, transferring consciousness and oh no, you're the computer, you know, and all this crazy stuff. I really like it. Now, some of the special effects leave a little to be desired. The cave is a little fake. There's a lot of memes about that. Also, this is how you make an android, a silly putty green blob, and you spin around real fast. So, and you just push three buttons to turn a knob. You look past, much like with TOS, you look past all that. You look at the deeper story, and it's really creepy. You know, it's a really creepy, unsettling story. It sticks with you afterward. You're like, okay, what happened there? Like where did we lose our humanity in this process? And you gotta love Sherry Jackson as Andrea, my biggest TOS crush. I mean, literally like the most beautiful woman in Star Trek. Like, what is your number one Star Trek babe? Sherry Jackson. All right, we don't do all that stuff light here, but I just gotta say, like, the most beautiful woman in Star Trek, Sherry Jackson's Andrea. And the outfit doesn't hurt either, right? Also, Ted Cassidy is Ruck. Very cool. He's a really, I mean, they make him out to be this very intimidating looking guy, but he's wearing like this kind of goofy costume, but it doesn't matter. The juxtaposition of what this tough giant guy, but he's wearing like what's like a dress robe looking thing is interesting. And of course, he has, you know, amazing voice. He voiced the Gorn in Arena, as well, I was just talking about Arena. He did the voice there. He does still do the voice of Baylock. So a great guest cast. And, you know, this is really the first episode that features Christine Chapel as well. So in a big way, you know, Naked Time was a couple scenes. But anyway, that's number one. Number two, underrated. I don't know if this counts in what we're talking about here. I love the Omega Glory. It's one of my favorite episodes. It has one of the most rewatchability factor to me. Very high rewatchability factor. I think you get another Starfleet ship. You get another captain. I think Captain Tracy, Morgan Woodward, another great guest star on TOS. Like, seriously, if it wasn't Justin, you know, if it wasn't Ricardo Montalban, I would probably say Morgan Woodward just for his two performances, especially the one as Captain Tracier. He was great. He's a real match for Kirk. Yes, it's parallel Earth and all that again, but I don't, I'm not going to fault it for that. I understand the metaphor. Yeah, them having the exact, the most unbelievable thing is not necessarily the planet exists, but the fact that Kirk knows the Constitution of the United States off the top of his head. But I really like that episode. It's got action. It's got locations. Love seeing, like I said, I love seeing another Constitution class ship in the show. So I think that's really underrated. I don't get why people hate it so much. I really don't. So I'm going to say it. That's underrated. And then I'm going to go with Requiem for Methuselah. Methuselah. Requiem. Say that three times fast. Requiem for Methuselah. Requiem for Methuselah. Requiem for Methuselah. See, you can do it. I just did it. Very underrated episode. You know, it's a lost gem in the third season. Yes, Kirk acts a little out of character, but I'm just going to chalk that up to the Rigelian fever that the crew is suffering at that time. So there you have it. You know, and strangely enough, another thing with like androids and it's a recurring theme and TOS and you know all of Star Trek, especially with TNG with Data. And, you know, maybe that's why Data is my favorite character of all Star Trek, really. And so maybe that's why I gravitate to these android episodes. The character Flint, very fascinating character there. It's to think this one guy shaped history so much, right? And also, you know, and another thing about this one is because no one ever talks about it or whatever, I didn't see this episode till much later. I call it much later in life, but when the Sci-Fi Channels, to me, it's much later, right? The Sci-Fi Channel special editions were coming out. You know, I was like 12, and I'd seen most of these episodes, and I was like, you know, 6 or 7. So it's half my life later at that point, right? So I mean, this episode, like I said, came out of nowhere for me, and really enjoyed it. And the Kirk thing might be a little weak in that episode, but other than that, and we're gonna talk about Requiem for Methuselah down the road here more in depth, but. That is the weakest point, but again, fanboy justification. He's suffering the effects of the Rigelian fever, even if he's not diagnosed. So that's, and you know, if a guy like Flint creates the perfect woman, you know, and who knows what kind of pheromones he's got going on there, I don't know. He's been doing experiments forever, so you know that would hit Kirk like a ton of bricks, and there you have it. So I think those three. So those are my three most underrated episodes of TOS. What Are the Little Girls Made Of? The Omega Glory, and Requiem for Methuselah. Now. The tough one, Jimmy. The overrated or overly beloved episodes. It's tough because, you know, most of the ones that people love, I love. So I got to give an answer here. So, you know, I had to like look at an episode list here and really decide. And you know, first of all, I got to go with the Mud episodes. Can I just say Mud's Woman and I Mud? I'm just gonna that makes it really easy for me. I'm not a big fan of the character. Like we were talking about, you know, not too long ago, me and Kim were talking about if they're going to have a third Mud episode. Maybe it's the comedy, you know, it doesn't date well. I just, the character's goofy. Like, I never much cared for Harry Mudd. And, so there you go. See, there's androids and I Mudd, and I'm not saying I love that one. So who knows why I think what I think. But yeah, Mudd's Women and I Mudd. I do not get he's like the Q of TOS. Be like, oh, I love every Q episode. I love every Harry Mudd episode. Yeah, I don't really love those Mudd episodes. So I'm going to say those two I'll pass on both of those. As far as anything else, you know, I can't really, I mean, all these episodes that people love, I love them too. I mean, if I had to pick one, another one that I could think of, that maybe people talk about, and I'm like, yeah, whatever. Day of the Dove, you know. Other than Michael Ansara's, you know, Kang, I don't really gravitate towards that episode. It's been all these other ones, like, oh no, we're taken over by a mysterious force and we have to fight, and it's like, yeah, you guys have done that before a lot. So Day of the Dove, yeah. I mean, I don't dislike it, but I know a lot of people are like, yeah, it's one of the five good episodes of the third season. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. There's more. First of all, there's more than five episodes in the third season, and that one isn't even in my top five of the third season. So I don't know. That might be controversial. You guys let me know what you think about Day of the Dove, but then I'm gonna go with Mud's Woman, I Mud, and Day of the Dove. Those are if I had to pick my top three. Most overly beloved or overrated episodes, those would be the ones. So, Kintrip, you might know him as my regular co-host here on Standard Orbit, has this to say. Have you ever been to a Turker's prison? Do you like gladiator movies? These, of course, airplane references. Thank you, Ken. What element, have you ever been to, you like the smell of men's locker rooms? What element of a Tarantino film would you like to see in his Star Trek movie? I would like to just to see very clever and engaging writing, you know, because in Tarantino, like, that's his bread and butter, right? Like, two people sitting having a conversation. And that's why I think he's a great fit for Star Trek, because, you know, what do we love about Star Trek? We love the character interplay. We love the great high concept issues people discuss. So I feel like if you get a scene with, like, you know, four guys around the conference room table or whatever, right, he can make that compelling. He can make that, you know, he's going to draw you in. That scene could be, you know, it could be 10 minutes long and you're not checking your watch. You know, that's what I'm looking for. And I love the Kelvin Timeline movies, mostly, but this would be let's try to be a big blockbuster like Star Wars, like they're doing, and more like, let's delve into these characters and these issues and these conversations. You know, and that's what TOS is more about than anything else. So that is what I would like to see in a Star Trek movie. Now, conversely, what I would least like to see an element of his films in a Star Trek movie would be just the gore, right? The violence, the gratuity, violence-wise or sex-wise or anything like that. Because, you know, I still think Star Trek, I mean, it's going to be rated R, right? But you can have a rated R film, but not necessarily just be completely over the top with so much stuff. And I feel like he really enjoys doing that. And that's the reason I wasn't the biggest fan of The Hateful Eight, honestly. That was his most recent movie. I didn't particularly care for it. And then the gratuity, really, and like I said, in all those areas, is kind of what set me off to it, you know, put me off on it. So that's something. I love his writing, his conversation, his engaging characters, and the interplay between them. Do not love the gratuitous violence and also sex in some areas, too. So we can, like, tone that down, please, when we do Star Trek. Because, you know, it's a movie I want to sit with my kids one day and watch. So thank you, Ken. So then Brent Williams, the second, asked me, is Star Trek a military organization? And of course, Tim Hans immediately responds, Starfleet is a humanitarian and peacekeeping armada. And so, you know, Ken and Tim and Brent kind of all go, I'll go back and forth here. And was it Tim that said, yeah, Rod, Tim mentions that Roddenberry saw Starfleet more like the Coast Guard than the military navy. And Ken says, never tell the Coast Guard they're not military. They think they are, and so do I, and I would agree. And then Jim chimes in again. Jimmy goes from before. He says, the NASA space shuttle didn't have phasers and photon torpedoes. So, you know, that is stuff I really, and that's why I jokingly, and that is, Brent is asking, is Starfleet a military organization? Because Ken and I always find ourselves going on some fun tangent about it, poking fun at each other during the show. But, I think Pike's response, I think his definition of Starfleet is great. It's humanitarian peacekeeping armada. That is so vague, but also such a big umbrella that it covers a lot. And Nick Meyer certainly sees it as a military organization. I think, like, Roddenberry back in the 60s saw it more as a military organization, but then it's his whole kind of mindset and worldview shifted to the 80s. You know, it was more, it was less military, more explorers and But, you know, you have ranks, you have captains, you have court-martials, right? You have JAG officers, you know? So, I mean, so many trappings of the military. There are Navy ships and all, midshipmen and all that stuff. There's an academy you go to. So that is one of those questions that will always be debated in Star Trek. But thank you for stirring up that hornet's nest, Brandon. And, of course, I'd love to hear what else they have to say about it. And then Ben Greet asked me, have you ever read written TOS fan fiction? If so, what is it about? And this is his second question. He asked me about Brendan Circuses earlier, so thanks for another question there, Ben. I've never written Star Trek fan fiction. And I've you know, now that I think about it, I don't think I've ever read Star Trek fan fiction either. I've read a lot of Star Wars fan fiction back in the day. The Force.net, I don't know how much crossover there is here with Star Trek and Star Wars fans, but on the Force.net was like the number one Star Wars site to go to, as when the prequel era. They had an amazing fan fiction section. I used to print out the fan fiction. I still have the binder around here somewhere of Star Wars fan fiction, mainly prequel stuff, you know, connecting the dots between, it's like post episode one, pre episode four, you know. So there's so, it was such a blank slate back then, you know, people just went to town on that stuff. And that's really all I have to say about fan fiction. That's is there any fan fiction you recommend? Because there's so much. I think that's the reason, because, you know, okay, let me frame it this way. You know, Lucas put the prequel era off limits for all Star Wars expanding universe material, because he wanted to be a blank slate for when he did the prequels, you know. So there was nothing. There was literally nothing you could go read about then, because he had said, nope, can't do it. I'm talking about it in the movies. So that's why I was like, oh, man, there's fan people writing about this. That's why I ate it up so much. You know, Star Trek, there's so much. There's books. There's video games. There's comic books. You know, there's so much else out there in addition to the episodes, which of there are, you know, legion of episodes too, unlike Star Wars, where there, you know, there was only three or four movies at the time. When you have hundreds of Star Trek episodes, you don't feel the need, oh, I need to go read more. At least that's how I didn't feel that way, so I didn't go seek it out. I mean, I'm sure it's out there. Obviously you have an opinion on it if you ask me about it, so there you go. I have not read or written any TOS fan fiction. Sorry to disappoint you either, Ben. So Jeff Lubin asks, what episode moment do you think gave us the best glimpse of what makes Kirk tick, what kind of man he is? I thought about this one for a while, too. This is tough when you have to pick one, you know, scene. I would go with Balance of Terror, the scene where he's talking to Bones, questioning his own decisions. And I think that's a very powerful scene. And, it's, you know, and that's a big reason why that episode is so well regarded, because it really shows Kirk as a leader, the weight of command. You know, he knows that he's going to make some big decisions, and it's okay to question yourself. You know, I think self-analysis and self-awareness is a huge character trait, very important character trait, especially in leaders. You know, if you're going to be a leader of people, you need to kind of see your decisions from all angles and really ponder them and be, you know, what if I'm wrong? What if I'm right? So I like the fact that Kirk will question himself if he feels like, well, I don't know, what am I doing here? You know, I'm like... and then Bones is always, you know, his voice of reason. So that if I had to pick, like, you know, one scene, you know, as you ask, I would go with that one. And, you know, the whole episode itself too, it just shows off Kirk's leadership skills as a commander and whatnot. So, I would go with Balance of Terror, specifically that scene is immediately what I kind of immediately thought of. And then thinking about it more, I was like, yep, I understand why my mind went there. All right, guys. Well, those are my answers to your questions. I thank you again for answering them all, and you know, I put out the call, and you guys answered the call. So thank you so much. And you know, that went on pretty decent amount. I try to expand and elaborate on the answers as much as I could. Didn't want to give you all a 15-minute episode, so I think we got a standard length episode here. Standard length, standard orbit. So okay. This whole talking about see, it's, you know, when you're answering questions directed at you, and you have to share your opinions. It's easier to talk about than just coming up with a subject. So if I had to do one of these again, and it wasn't just, here, Zach, here's some questions you can answer for me about yourself and your opinions, it would be a little more challenging, but I can, you know, I like to talk and I can do it. That's why I'm a podcaster. So hopefully, you guys found those, answers satisfactory. And, that's going to do it for us this week on Standard Orbit, and I look forward to the feedback, to your feedback. We're in a feedback loop. I look forward to that when the episode gets posted, and it's fun. Yeah, thank you guys so much, and again, like, this kind of interaction is why we do podcasting. Ken and I both, you know, we always say, like, you know, we're nothing without the listeners, right, without the contributors, and you know, we would love to get together and talk about Star Trek, you know, whenever, but just knowing that other people out there, they're listening, they're enjoying what we have to say, they're invested and our answers, and respect our opinions, right? For some reason, at least I like to think you do respect our opinions. But anyway, it makes it all worthwhile, guys. So thank you so much for contributing to the conversation, and we'll see you out there again. We'll you know, we're gonna have to have an Ask Ken Anything episode coming up here. Give me a week off and then he can answer your questions, and he can give his whole two cents on if Starfleet is a military organization or not, because he's got a whole prepared speech, I'm sure, for that kind of question. So. Answering your questions isn't the only thing going on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what else you might have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room. there's no one else in the scene. And Moreno was talking, it's like, we couldn't even get like 5 or 6 extras. They were siphoning all of our extras. Our extras money was going to DS9 to put more aliens on the promenade. Now,
yeah, all those extras were hanging out at Quark's.
That's right.
Because they knew, don't go to a Hutchinson party.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
When I was a projectionist, I literally had a masking taped X on the bottom of my seat. And then when the seats were taken out and replaced with, you know, new and improved seats, I was like, can I get that seat right there? So I do now have that seat in my living room, right? Over there.
You live with a very patient woman, Mike.
Warp 5.
So I'm guessing that a lot of the interactions were probably about 50% fact and 50% dramatic license. So
okay, hold on a second. Are you telling me Hollywood's not reliable? You telling me I can't believe Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter is not real?
Brandon.
Really, that's where we go?
Brandon, we need to have a talk right now.
Primitive Culture, a look at history and culture through Star Trek.
So that idea of nostalgia is very much describing people in the same situation as the Voyager crew. You know, they're far away from home, they're wanting to get home. It's that kind of homesick longing. But maybe that's one reason that we see this kind of transition from in the early seasons, this nostalgia for this kind of idealized Earth that may or may not really exist anymore, to in the later seasons, the nostalgia is for the journey itself.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, get the show on iTunes or the Apple Podcasts app. Be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, Speaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well.
If you'd like to get in touch with us here at Trek FM, you can always find us on trekfm.com/contact and look in the sidebar on the show page, or you can go to speakpipe.com/trekfm and please leave us a voice message. You can also contact us through Twitter at Trek FM or on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and of course in the Babel Conference. Type Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or go to our website at Trek FM and click discussion on the menu bar. Another way you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron on the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find the current goals and different milestone contributions along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details on patreon.com/trekfm. Speaking of Patreon, thank you as always to our great associate producers for Standard Orbit. Norman Lau, Tim Robertson, Nick Anastasio, Richard Marquez, and Corey Elrod.
Yes, thank you guys so much for your support for both Standard Orbit and Trek FM. So Ken, if people want to find you out there on the internet, where can they find you?
Hey, you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference and engaging people when I have the opportunity. You can also find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @BostonSCPO. And we like to tweet out all our new episode information as soon as we get it, as well as our colleagues. So look for me there.
As for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreOnZach. And I'm also the host of my own podcast, Always Hold On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman series from the early 2000s. And you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and join us again next time here on Trek FM for another episode of Standard Orbit.